Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Mary Conlon, Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. It's lovely to talk to you. Likewise. How are you?
I'm good, Mary. The wine line is open. What's happened?
We can have a party.
Great. I'm on my way. Tell us.
Well, it's yesterday afternoon. Okay. I just happened to open my boot of the car.
Yes.
And I discovered wine in my car.
How many bottles?
There were 12 bottles of white.
Wow.
And 2 bottles of red.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And when did you? Oh, you didn't buy them.
No, it ain't mine. No. I know it sounds very weird.
Yes.
But obviously, someone poor, unfortunate person put it into my car by mistake.
Tell us.
Sorry, I was in the Stillorgan car park. I was out for a meal with my family.
Okay.
And I came back and came home. It didn't bother. And so yesterday when I opened the boot and discovered this, the only thing I can think is that my boot was open.
Yes.
And somebody mistook my car for their car.
And what type, can you tell me what type of vintage car you have, Mary, or classic car?
Well, it's a vintage car, yes.
It's a vintage car now.
23 1D.
Ford Fiesta.
A car, Fiesta, silver Fiesta.
And but when surely when they opened the boot, Mary, surely I don't know how was your boot configured. Have you got anything in the boot? Have you lawnmowers?
I had my normal shopping bags in it, you know, and I wouldn't mind, but I had another bag with a raincoat in it, and that's how it, and the two separate bottles were placed very neatly in between my raincoat. Right. Okay.
And what type of wine is the 14 mystery bottles that appeared in the back of
your car? Pardon me?
What type of wine is it, Mary?
It was 6 bottles of Oyster Bay and 6 bottles of Villa Maria.
Oh, lovely.
And 2 bottles of red wine, which is Tesco's, their own Tesco wine.
Okay. Tesco's. And where are they now? The wine?
Pardon me?
Where's the wine now? Where's the...
Sorry, I found it hard to hear you.
You haven't been at the wine, have you, Mary?
Pardon me?
You haven't been at the wine. Where are the 14 bottles now, Mary?
The 14 bottles are in my kitchen.
Okay, sitting on the wall. 14 bottles sitting on the wall of Mary's kitchen in South Dublin. It was in the Stillorgan Shopping Centre. They were purchased. Where do you think they were purchased? Tesco, obviously, there's a bit of a clue, isn't there, in the own brand?
Yeah, they were purchased in Tesco, yes.
So
yes,
did you purchase 14 bottles of wine? That must have been for a party or something. In Tesco's, what time were you missing from your car, Mary, from your little Fiesta?
What time?
Yeah, what time frame do you reckon they put the wine into the car?
Well, I don't know. I left Stillorgan car park about 5:30, I'd say.
Okay. So yesterday afternoon, somebody inadvertently was told...
No, Sunday. It'll be Sunday afternoon.
Sunday
afternoon.
Yeah, okay, that narrows it down. Okay. Sunday afternoon in Stillorgan, outside the Tesco, what colour is your beautiful little Fiesta, Mary? What colour?
Silver.
Okay. So somebody came along with 14 bottles of wine. That's a case and two. And opened the boot. You believe they inadvertently put it in your car. It wasn't a gift.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Mary, how do you know you don't have a secret admirer?
Well, now, Joe, if you saw me, and I'm not in the first flush of youth.
But you have a brilliant sense, you have a brilliant personality, good sense of humour. And if we do find the owner, the rightful owner of this vintage collection of wine, if the wine line does find them, the 14-bottle owner of, I presume we would want, well, I would ask for a little gesture to you, Mary. Do you take a little sup of wine yourself? Speak freely.
Oh, yes. I enjoy a glass of wine. Right. Yes, I do.
And would your preference be white or red?
White.
Why? Well, then, I just wonder, like, it's 12 bottles of white and only 2 bottles of red. Are you sure? Was it your birthday recently, Mary? Did you?
No, my birthday is in December, though.
And did you win a race at the athletics championship in Rome or anything? Did you?
No, I didn't win anything, and I didn't win anything at Ascot yesterday either.
Of course, yeah. Okay, so we're looking for the rightful owner of 14 bottles of wine. Probably worth around between the 14 and about 200 quid.
It's worth over 100 quid.
Oh, well,
over 100 euro.
Okay. And it was the receipt there? Was the receipt?
The receipt was in the box.
Okay.
Yep.
And were you able to make out the time of purchase, Mary?
That's it. I'm just looking. Hold on a sec, Joe.
Okay,
I can't see. Let's just see. the merchant verified.
Yeah.
What do I see?
14:42 on Bloomsday, the 16th.
Bloomsday, that's right.
On Father's Day.
On Father's Day,
in Stillorgan. Did you inadvertently arrive home and say to your partner, "Get the glasses out. Get the cooler, put everything on ice, we're going to have a party." And you went out to the boot of your car and there it was, gone.
Yeah.
And you automatically presume, the other person, Mary, I suspect, will automatically assume that it was stolen.
Of course.
That somebody was watching. And we're saying that Mary Condon, who's the Good Samaritan on the line now, she's saying quite clearly it was not stolen. It was inadvertently put in her car, and she is prepared, in a gesture of goodwill, solidarity, happiness and communication, you are prepared to give all 14 bottles back to the rightful owner.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, the problem is...
I would be delighted to do so.
The problem is, under my forensic questioning, you have given away, I have made you give away all the detail. I shouldn't have asked... You see, Mary, I shouldn't have asked you what time it was, because if someone rings in claiming the wine, I'd be able to say, well, come on, tell us what time, and then you could look at the receipt. But now I can't do that because I shut my mouth off. And is there any other details? Would it be critical?
Yes,
would
there
be...
is, Joe.
Okay,
there is,
okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There's the credit paid by credit card. And I have that into that information is on it as well.
Ah, well, there we have it. Now, would you, Mary, would you not be tempted to go to... Where's the nearest Garda station in Stillorgan? Kilmacud, Shankill? Is there a Garda station in Stillorgan? Would you not go to your nearest Garda station and hand it over to the officers of the law?
Well, I could do that. I could do that, but I just thought that by chance, like you have such a wonderful programme that people listen to it and maybe somebody might hear
it.
It's
a needle in a haystack. You know, I don't know what to do with this. I think you should take the case to the guard, so to speak. The case of wine. Ask them. Okay, stay there, Mary. 51551 0818 715 815. Florence Moore, would you step forward, please?
Hello.
Florence.
I'm stepping forward feeling a right idiot because of putting the wine in the wrong boot. My car was beside, but there was a car between us. So don't believe you.
So Florence, what happened?
What happened was I live in Sandyford Road and I drove to Stillorgan where I often go.
Yes.
And went into the big Tesco store, and I was a bit taken aback by the tiny little place where they have the wine.
Okay.
Not knowing there's another big store, big awful affair. And I had read in the paper the day before there was a special offer on Villa Maria.
Oh, Villa Maria.
And Oyster Bay wine, white wine, Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand.
Yes, all the way.
And my daughter's like that. And then I put in two bottles of red for good measure.
Okay.
And I was not allowed to buy it because it was before 12:30 and I had to go out without it.
Okay.
I didn't know you didn't know
on
you
on a Sunday,
buy it. I knew about 10:30. I just thought it was always 10:30 with buying wine, buying alcohol. So I went off to a function in Stepaside Golf Course from 12:30 until maybe 2:00. And I came back to Lorgan Shopping Centre.
Right.
A back way from there.
Okay.
And I just went into the big store to see what it was like.
Yeah.
And I got three boxes. Oh, I said, that'll be handy for me to bring home the wine because I didn't have anything to bring it home in this small little place. And off I go with my two boxes back up and I expected the wine to be waiting for me, but they'd put it back on the shelf. So I had to pick it out again.
Ah, no. Okay. Florence, that would drive you to drink.
Look what I was... It was painful, absolutely painful.
Okay. I
can't describe it.
Yeah, but how did you get so confused that you put...
I'll tell you why. I wanted then... I saw three empty automatic things and I wanted to pay there. Oh, no, you had to have a scanner, which, of course, I haven't got. So I went back and I'd lost my place in the queue to pay for this wine.
Yes.
But a very nice lady in an orange suit let me go and then I got through and paid 126 euro and stuck the receipt into one of the wine boxes.
Yes.
And then I couldn't get out the door because I was in a little black trolley thing.
Okay.
So I said to the girl, my car's only over there, will you not let me go? No, it would ring. The alarm would go off. It would go off for ages. I left the wine with her, went out the door, got a trolley with my special.
Yeah, Florence, can you? Florence, I'm going to open a bottle of wine. You're taking so long telling this story. Go ahead.
I'm trying to be honest. When I went back with the trolley, this lady helped me. She lifted the box the trolley with me. Off we go down towards my car, and there's a double wing.
Yes.
And then we got. We got to open my mum's car and I clicked it open and she lifted in the wine carefully.
But how?
Then she said to me, wait till you hear, this is ending in a minute.
Okay.
She said to me, give me your trolley, I'll give you a euro. Oh no, said I want my token.
Yeah.
So back I go with the trolley and got my token. And we did chat, she had a 14 euro son, he just
got
into
the
job.
Yeah.
Back I go to my car, get into my car, I saw all this in CCTV. Yeah. And I drove off. And the fella kept looking, the Terry in the security man in Tesco. And that girl, I don't know her name, and I
put
the wine into the wrong car. Mary? I've only come out of lunch and I only half heard it in my car.
Okay, but Florence, you said you clicked your boot and the boot opened. But then how did you end up going to Mary's?
I clicked the car I came to and the boot opened because the person who owns the car had the car left open. That's how I got the wine in the wrong car. My car was a car away.
Oh, that's right.
And then the security people kept looking and a man came with a lot of people and the security guy said, oh, they're coming from the cinema. And I said, they won't all fit in that car. And because we had seen, he had spotted that my car is a silver Yaris and this car is a silver Ford.
Silver small car as well. And Florence, when did you discover the missing wine, so to speak?
When I got home after all the carry-on of blah, 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 I sat down at home.
Yes.
I sat down, because I'd been out since 11:30 and sat down. This was after 3:00. And I said, I'll go out for the wine in a little while. That probably was an hour or two later. And I went out and I had an empty boot. So I was astonished.
And what did you think had happened?
I hadn't a clue. to.
Did you think it was stolen? Did you think a wine had been...
Not really.
Okay.
Not really, because it took me a minute to go back with the trolley, say goodbye to the help. She confused me a bit by being too helpful. Very nice woman. But I'm not exactly crippled or grey or whatever.
Yeah, of course.
Very
So, Florence, can I ask you a personal question? If you don't mind now, you can check me. You
well,
can
I
check
don't
me.
Want telling what? The whole world any more about my business.
Why did you buy four? Why did you buy 14 bottles of wine?
Because I've four daughters.
Oh, don't
and
be talking.
Because the Villa Maria was one of my girls wanted, and I could never find it. I just Villa Maria, I recognize.
Okay.
I recognize it from the paper, the Tesco ad in the paper, and I've always known Oyster Bay. So I thought six bottles of each was a nice round number.
So you're
and then I just went mad and bought two reds. I can't even tell you the name of them.
They're Tesco own brand. They're lovely as well.
Good, that what you asked
good
me?
Strong red, very very soft on the palate with a hint of raspberry, cinnamon, blackcurrant, and some smokeless coal on the back taste when you let it slip down. Beautiful, beautiful. Now, Mary.
Yes.
Do you accept that Florence is a rightful owner of that wine?
Oh, I think she certainly is. I just apologise. I didn't open my boot earlier.
Okay. Now, Mary.
Misery.
Florence. Yeah. Florence. One question: did you hear all of what Mary said before you phoned us?
I didn't. I'm just,
okay.
No,
so I
just
want to ask you a verification question. I don't doubt you, Florence. I don't doubt you, but there's a lot of chancers around, as you know.
Oh,
and you're not one
I
of them.
You.
But can you tell me approximately what time you bought the wine on Sunday?
About 2:40.
Ah,
or
bingo.
2:50.
Bingo. Bingo. What time, Mary, is on that receipt?
14:42.
Florence, well done. Well
right,
done.
Yeah. Now, I'm delighted. I'm absolutely delighted that Florence phoned you and that we have an owner of it. Yes,
I think Flo and Mary might become lifelong friends over a bottle, over 14 bottles of wine of an afternoon.
This is absolutely amazing, and I feel a right idiot.
You're not. Will you stop?
Not at all.
Florence, have you never
Even
heard
a
of
bishop?
Florence, have you never heard of stories of people going out? Maybe their husband or wife are waiting for them in the car. They go to what they think is their car, because they're big car parks now. They sit in the passenger seat waiting for their other half, either in the driver's seat. And then they're sitting there. Then they get a phone call from their other half saying, "Where are you?" And he or she says, "I'm in the car. Where are you?" And he says, "I'm in the car." And he said, "We're not."
No, I never heard of that.
You're in the wrong car.
I was amazed, totally amazed, to find that it was an open car. The boot was open there. Now, how I happened to pass my own.
Yeah. But there's so many cars that are quite similar at the moment. And I think it's a simple mistake. So don't be giving out to yourself, Florence. You really shouldn't.
Oh, no,
and Mary, the Archdiocese of Dublin have been on, Mary. I don't know what religion you profess, so to speak. But they want to know, the last miracle like that they heard of was the miracle of Cana, where our Lord... There was no wine. There was no wine in the boot of your car, as far as you're concerned, when you left Tesco on Sunday. And when you got home, there was 14 bottles of wine. That is a miracle.
Yes, okay. Absolute miracle.
Now, we will organise Florence and Mary. We will organise off-air, of course, for the two of you to meet up. Probably, I was going to say go back to the car park, but I'm afraid of my life what might get lost. We'll arrange. It doesn't strike me, I'm looking at generally where you live, it doesn't strike me that you live too far away from each other.
Not too far,
so,
I wouldn't think so. No.
So with each other's permission under GDPR, or else we'll all be sent to prison if we give out people. Off air, Mary, with your permission, I'll give you Florence's number. And Florence, with your permission, I'll give your number to Mary. Is that okay?
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Are you anxious to get the wine? I'm sorry, Florence. Are your daughters anxious to get at the wine this afternoon?
No, because
are they gagging for?
I'm such a big idiot that I
well,
keep
me not.
At home due to something.
You're not.
Oh, I really feel stupid. My only question is, it was a man got into the car. Is that Mary's son? Or I don't know.
Well, the plot thickens.
Sorry?
Mary, were you the only person in that car? Or was there a man in the area?
No, my brother was with me.
Well done. Yeah, well done. Well, that's another verification from Farris.
And were you at the cinema?
No, I wasn't. I was in across the road in Reba's having lunch.
Oh, lovely.
With my son and daughter-in-law and two delightful little grandchildren.
Well, Terry, the security guy, said that it was... well, I thought he said told me a man got in, and the two little kids. I saw them, but I didn't think four people got into the car. I could tell you the first three letters of it, but I'm not going to say it over air.
Okay.
I'm going to shut up and be quiet now.
Okay. Well, Florence Florence Moore and Mary Conlon, Flo and Mo. I hope you meet very, very soon, and the handover. Okay, come here.
Listen, Joe, thank you very much.
Okay.
I really appreciate because I was anxious that I would find the owner because I'm sure they were very upset about it. And
I was thinking
there was a function on and they missed it, you know?
Okay.
So thank you so much.
And Mary, for being such a good Samaritan, we have a night for you in the Herbert Park Hotel in Dublin. That includes bed and breakfast, but no wine now, Mary. Stay away from the wine. Stay away from the wine. And Florence, for you, in consolation, for you giving out to yourself, which you should not be giving out to yourself, you've a night.
Oh,
in the, you're getting a night in the Herbert Park Hotel with bed and breakfast, and you can bring the 14 bottles of wine. Okay. Thanks to the Herbert Park Hotel. They're brilliant for doing that so quickly. Florence Moore, Mary Conlon, lifelong friends.
Yeah.
Joe at RTE.ie. The wine line is open.
On 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is the text. Will you have a listen to this voice again? Because every time we started playing it last Monday, Monday week effectively, and every time we play the voice of Samantha Cox, this is the woman that's been going around duping many different names, Carrie Jade Williams is another one. Just listen to her voice, because the last time we put out her voice, another person came forward and said she's duped me as well.
I was born in Bessborough in Cork. So I was born obviously in Ireland and then I was adopted, but I grew up in the UK. My mum was one of the first to be allowed to adopt as a single parent. I was adopted because my mum thought there was too many people on the planet.
Okay.
So my, like, even my adoption was some sort of... my mum was a bit of a rebel back in the day and very much a feminist. I love her to pieces. You know, I went to Steiner school, so my grandparents were horrified at that. I think my grandparents were convinced I would never learn to read or write.
Okay, we had a communication from another company who've been duped by Carrie J. Wade. And again, there's that woman's voice you just heard there. And she owes them over €4,000 and she's in Stubbs Gazette. But Carrie J. Wade doesn't take, she hired furniture and for a fundraising event. Hello. For a fundraising event. And she never paid for the hire of the furniture and disappeared. But then Carrie J. Wade, as we discovered, and the podcast is on the Dock on One website and the app on RTE. Carrie J. Wade, made by the Dock on One team. And a new episode drops every Friday and it's excellent. But this is her MO, so to speak. Carrie J. Wade, when you look for money offer, she goes on the offensive. She says, this is the letter the company have sent us in, as from Carrie J. Wade, Samantha Cooks, Rachel, Rebecca, Sarah, all the different... As I myself have not heard back, and I'm very concerned of this matter resolved, please see a letter attached. You are maintaining that this has not been processed before I commit to paying this again. And she's looking for a refund. She's looking for a refund. And then she accuses the company that she owes the money to as being in breach of the Equality Act. I feel it is best that this is passed on to your legal team so I can instruct my solicitor to deal with this on behalf if you are maintaining that there are still monies due, and they've sent us other material to prove that there are still monies due to such an extent that she's in Stubbs Gazette. Some of our emails don't even make sense. I am writing after numerous back and forth regarding my invoice, which was due for payment 17 days ago. This is Carrie J. Wade looking for money from the company. Unfortunately, the company does not offer an accessible way for me to pay, which is in breach of the Equality Act. After receiving numerous text messages, says Carrie Wade, from someone alleging to work within your company, I requested in writing an up-to-date invoice for an explanation to show that the invoice had not been paid. Your company representative then threatened to breach data protection and started contacting, other people searching for the payment. I again reminded them that even though I am disabled, she's not, under both the Equality Act and the Data Protection Act, as the customer, I am the only, in caps, block, black letters, I am the only person to be contacted to resolve this payment. So let's hear, there's a second example of her voice, but it's the second example of her voice there. Let's hear Carrie Jade again.
I was born in Bessborough in Cork. So I was born obviously in Ireland and then I was adopted, but I grew up in the UK. My mum was one of the first to be allowed to adopt as a single parent. I was adopted because my mum thought there was too many people on the planet. Okay. So even my adoption was some sort of... my mum was a bit of a rebel back in the day and very much a feminist. I love her to pieces. You know, I went to Steiner school, so my grandparents were horrified at that. I think my grandparents were convinced I would never learn to read or write. I grew up as a kid on protest marches and all of that, so that was our holidays. Some children got taken to, you know, SeaWorld in Florida. I got taken to stand outside to, like, protest poor Tillicum the whale. My mum would always have her opinions on things. And I can always remember my grandmother always used to say, oh, well, that's because we let you listen to David Bowie.
And as we heard yesterday, or the day before, from Reverend William Smith and Tullamore, that is a direct, that story there from Carrie Jade Williams, that voice, that clip, by the way, is from the real Carrie Jade, the podcast from the multi-award-winning Doc on One team. But as we heard from the Reverend in Tullamore on Monday, that story there at the end about my mother was at Greenham Common and she was a rebel and her granny said nothing will ever come of her because she listened to David Bowie music, that's directly from a novel. A novel, and it's incredible coincidence that our Reverend could remember it when he heard it. That is a direct story from a novel, i.e. a work of fiction. But anyway, if you recognise that voice, 0818 715 815 joe@rte.ie. Is Marianne there? Marianne.
Hello there. Good afternoon. Hi.
What's happened?
Hello.
Yes, what happened, Marianne?
Hello. Oh, sorry. I do apologise. Yeah. We've come over to Ireland because our mum is poorly, being poorly.
Okay.
Mum and Dad retired back to Ireland like 30-odd years ago. And me and my sisters arrived and my mum's whole cottage is infested with bats.
Oh, no.
Yeah, to the extent of that there's bat droppings all over the house. So Mum is in South Tipperary General Hospital with a chest infection, which has turned to pneumonia. So this is the second time in 6 weeks she's been poorly. And we found ourselves Tuesday night when we arrived after being at hospital, it was late and we woke up in the middle of the night with bats in the bedroom. And it got to just trying to contact people, trying to find out what on earth we can do, who can help us. Mm-hmm. Since then, me and my sister have been, since Tuesday, we've been sleeping in the car because we cannot sleep in the house.
And when you say, Marianne, when you say the house is infested with bats, what are you looking at? How many?
Right. So, Joe, every evening at 19 minutes past 10 on the dot, there is exiting the house from the outside, from the roof outside. There is, on average, 30 bats every 2 minutes. But with them exiting out the hole in the roof outside, there is also, they're coming into the house. We have 15 bats at a time in the house. So you can imagine, like, the horror that me and my sister walked into, and we were terrified. But it's turned to now, the bats are terrified. The bats are scared. They don't want to be in here. You know, they're trying to get a route out, but there was absolutely no one to help us at all. You know, every time we made telephone calls, it was hours, and we were phoning back and trying to get in contact with someone. We finally got in contact with a ranger. Mm-hmm. And it was out of his jurisdiction.
Okay.
So where Mum is in Killinall, Ballintore, the Rangers, and I'm no disrespect to the Rangers at all. Because they are underpaid and underfunded. And his cut-off point is the Horse and Jockey Hotel and Restaurant in Thurles, which is literally a 10-minute drive from my mum's house. Mm-hmm. So clearly... And this side of South Tipperary has got absolutely no rangers. Now, these bats are protected, and they are protected a very, very good reason. They do so much good for the environment and our planet, and they should be protected. But having said that, are they protected? Because there is no ranger this side of South Tipperary.
And how often, Marianne, do you see the bats coming in and out?
Yeah, it's constant. It's constant. You know, last night, me and my sister, we're getting back from the hospital about 9:30. We're dreading it. We're dreading it because we know come 19 minutes past 10, all hell's going to break loose again. Last night, we were in the house until 2:30.
Wow.
If it wasn't for... by chance and by luck, somebody give us the telephone number of a Susan Kerwin from the Bat Rehabilitation Island. And if it wasn't for her, Joe, well, I don't know what me and my sister would have done, because we have been in a hell of a state. But we've actually now, we've been educating ourselves. We've been saving and rescuing bat pups. We've been reuniting them with their mums, and to see these animals just crawling on the floor frantically trying to find their mums, it is heartbreaking.
And when you say you're sleeping in the car, are you afraid to go into the house?
We can't, Joe, it is so infested. They are just, where they're exhausted, where they're trying to get out, they are just dropping on the bed next to us. They're in the kitchen, they're hanging from the extractor fan.
Look. And what about the opening the windows, the doors?
You can do. We do that, and we are now ushering them out to safety. But they're still coming into. They're still in the house where they're getting exhausted trying to fly out of the house. They're in our shoes. They're in our clothes. They're in the bedding. They're in the washing. They're in cups. They're in the sink. There's bat droppings everywhere. And what I'm saying is that how can these animals be protected when we have no ranger to protect them? There's no protection for them. There's no protection for us. You know, it's not getting away from the fact that the bats, you know, we need rangers everywhere. Of course we do. The bats are protected for a reason. But it doesn't get away from the fact that me and my sister are sleeping in a car. So when my mum is discharged from hospital, you know, what's going to happen? There's an 84-year-old woman got to sleep in the car. I'm sleeping in the house.
And have there been bats in the house when your mother has been there on her own?
Joe, there has been, and to tell you the God's honest truth, we did not realise the extent of the problem until we arrived in Ireland last, you know, down home last week. Now, obviously, the bats, they have come to the property. They're basically using mum's house as a maternity unit. That is what they're roosting. They've had their babies. They're just starting to have their babies. So when we arrived, my niece was over 2 weeks ago. She never saw her back. But they're having their babies now. The mums are going out to feed. The babies are getting like a little bit stronger. They're getting a little bit nosy. They're falling through holes in the property, you know, into the house. So therefore, the mums are coming into the house as well because the babies are in distress and they need to be reunited with their babies. But they're such wonderful mums that even the aunties come into the house to look for the baby. So this is the problem that we've got. But they have got no protection, Joe. The Minister of Wildlife, he is not protecting them. There's a law that says that they are protected species, but there's no rangers. And I'm sure South Tipperary, I'm sure there's loads of counties.
But I thought Marianne
and Ireland haven't got them.
But in terms of, I thought bats don't like light. What about lighting up the house?
Oh, that's correct. They need the lights to be out because obviously they sleep during the day. But where they're coming into the house, say for example after a pup, they're coming in and the lights on. You know that's they're disorientated. Mm. So therefore, then you have to turn the lights out because even if you turn the lights out, Joe, and the bats are in the house, you've got to be able to turn the light on to see where they are to let them out.
Okay. And can they not find a way out through doors or windows or the eaves or whatever themselves?
Yeah, they're coming out of the eaves. I mean, obviously, Joe, I have only educated myself, me and my sister, just like the last few days. So, you know, I'm not a bat expert. I'm not a bat expert and I don't pretend to be, but all I know is that these are a protected species that are being let down.
Are there bat droppings and bat urine? Is there a strong odour?
There is a funny smell to the house, Joe, to tell you the truth. Bat droppings are... See, and this is the thing as well. There's bat droppings. We come into the property in the mornings and there's bat droppings everywhere, like on the work surface. Mum's 84. She's partially sighted. You know, she wouldn't see that. She would not see that, you know. Okay. And if she was to be in the house now, if she got... discharged from hospital now and she managed to get up the stairs to her bedroom and then faced 7 to 9 bats in her bedroom, you know, she's going to get a fright. She's going to fall down the stairs and kill herself. Oh, there's so many dangers to this. But it just doesn't get away from the fact that the bats are supposed to be protected, but there's no rangers in the area to protect them.
And your point is, your belief now is that your mother's cottage has become... the Hollis Street, Hollis Street Maternity Hospital,
or the Rotunda. Yes, it is. That is exactly, Joe. It is a maternity unit for the bats. It is, and these bats need to be protected. We need to be protected, and we need rangers in every single area. The Minister of Wildlife needs to ensure that these animals are being protected and the people as well. And these charities like the Bat Rehabilitation Ireland with Susan Kerwin, they need funding.
Okay, well, we're told, Marianne, there's a lone ranger on his or her way to you.
Thank you very much, Joe. And that is on the back of your wonderful research team, because since I contacted the radio station yesterday and since your wonderful team have been investigating it, we are now being inundated with telephone calls.
Oh,
but
great.
What about the people? What about the people, Joe, that haven't got the energy to stick with what me and my sister have gone through, just trying to get somebody to help us? It has been soul destroying because it has just been hitting a brick wall.
And when hopefully they will be able to do something, and hopefully they'll be there today. Hopefully your mother will come back to the house, to her home.
Well, this is the thing. At this present moment in time, with us sleeping in the car, with the amount of bats that are actually in the property, it's not going to be an instant thing for the rangers to come and you know, because you need a special license once the bats have migrated, and that's not until November. The pups stay with their mums for 6 months.
You've become an expert, Marianne.
Oh, Joe, honestly, it's just we are really, really trying hard to understand. But if you see a little pup crawling on the floor and its mum's outside frantically trying to get into it, humanity kicks in, Joe. And these are, that as much as me and my sister have been petrified, these creatures are absolutely distressed and terrorised by being in the situation that they're in. It's just something, we need help, Joe. We need help. And I'm sure there are hundreds of people in the same position where there are no rangers in the area.
Okay.
Do the bats, you know, do the bats know not to fly across the horse and jockey in Thurles because there's no ranger here? No, they don't. So how are they being protected?
Okay. Is there any, can you not get, sorry, I know it's expensive. Can you get alternative accommodation? You can't be sleeping in the car when you're in to see your mother in hospital.
Yeah, Joe, I've recently suffered a stroke and I am on permanent sick leave at the moment from work. And you know what, the cost of living, most people can just afford to get, you know, put food in the stomachs and food on the table for the kids.
Now where's your nearest big town from where your mother's house are? Where's it? Thurles? Where did you say?
The horse and jockey is Thurles, so that's the main.
And many of you, they're yourself and your sister.
There's me and my sister sleeping in the car and the prospects of my mum being discharged from hospital, Joe, and I don't know where we're going to put her. I don't know what we're going to do with her.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm told the ranger is coming out today. Isn't that correct?
No, the ranger, in fact, Joe, just to correct you, it is the regional manager that is coming out tomorrow, she's coming out tomorrow. And that is, as I said, on the back of your show. And I can't thank you for that.
It's only Wednesday. Let's see what happens. I've been told a ranger from North Tipperary is coming out to assess the situation, but it doesn't say when. I presume, given the urgency of it, it will be today or early tomorrow. Marianne, where will yourself and your sister sleep tonight?
We're in the car, Joe. We're in the car. Obviously, Mammy's got her car here, and that is where we are sleeping every single night.
Can you go in the house to use the bathroom, to put on a kettle? During the day,
we are in the house right now. We're just cleaning everywhere. We're just blitzing the house during the day, and then obviously we've just had a young lady. From an hour, she's driven at an hour and 40 minutes through Susan, through the bat rehabilitation island, to come and rescue the baby vet that we rescued last night that's hurt its wing.
Okay.
So I don't know, Joe. It's just desperate. It is absolutely desperate.
And you're obviously based in England, are you, Marianne?
We were all born in Ireland, and then Mammy and Dad went to England and then retired back here like 30 odd years ago. So we're backwards and forwards, you know, but it's just so happens that Mammy's ill this time where the bats have, they come back to the property. So they will migrate.
Yeah, come back. And then they will. To have their babies.
Yeah, but it might not be. They might go away for a couple of years and then remember, oh, we'll go and have that maternity unit. So this year, the group of bats that have come back are a large group of bats. And when the mummies have the baby pups, the female babies will stay with that group of bats for life. The men will go off and do their own little thing. Next year, if they decide to come back to this maternity unit, you know, it's going to be even bigger. And you know, it's everything, Joe. It's like,
you really are at your wit's end. You really are.
And it's desperate. It's honestly, and I just feel, you know, I feel bad for the bats that are supposed to be protected that quite clearly are not protected. Mm-hmm. And I feel sorry for the charities that are no government funding. I feel sorry for the other people that are in the same position as my lamb that hasn't got family that are fighting their cause for it. What on earth are they doing? Okay. What on earth are they doing?
Well, let's see how the region manager gets on. And we'll keep in touch, Marianne.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And kind regards to your mother is in hospital.
She's in South Tipperary General Hospital, and she's due to hopefully, please God, be discharged sometime this week. We thought that we was going to lose her this time last week.
Oh, God.
But I just don't know. She can't.
And South Tipperary is a general hospital is in which town? Clonmel or
that's in Clonmel. Yes, Clonmel, okay. That's in Clonmel. Yeah, that's in Clonmel. So we are absolutely. I don't know what we're going to do with her, Joe.
With fingers crossed.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll keep in touch. Thanks indeed, Marianne. Joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. Simon, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You are a pilot. You've been a pilot for 14 years, but you're not with Aer Lingus.
Yeah, that is correct, yeah.
And you don't want to tell me who you're with at the moment.
No, I did tell your researcher.
Okay, that's fine. Don't worry about it. You say you've never worked with Aer Lingus, though you have applied.
I have done many years ago, yes.
Okay. And you support the pilots. Tell us why.
Very much so. Compared to the current industry standards, the majority of pilots in Aer Lingus are significantly underpaid at the moment. And I think what they're fighting for, they have been fighting for quite a number of years now, is to get back up to pre-pandemic levels. I think a lot of the stuff that's been mentioned in the media forgets the fact that they took a pay cut during COVID, and it seems to me as an outsider that hasn't been restored yet. And you have a case, it seems to me, again as an outsider, I'd use that caveat the whole way through, but it seems to me that you have people occupying seats of the aircraft, referring to pilots, doing the same job, but one person is on 10% less than another. And that's one factor.
Well, first of all, a lot of people took a pay cut during COVID. A lot of people, especially in the private sector, didn't get it back. Though I do accept the public sector, of which Aer Lingus is no longer a member. The public sector did get it back. And in our teaching profession, unfortunately, at the minute, there are teachers working side by side, and this was agreed by the unions who are being paid different rates because of historic, and it's relatively recent. Okay, Simon, what does a walk to rule mean?
I'm not a member of a union myself, but just to give you a quick example, all the airlines would rely very much so on the goodwill of their pilots, especially at this time of the year. It's very possible for pilots to run out of hours when they're doing long duties. We're all familiar with air traffic control slots. They're the bane of our lives at this time of the year in particular. So it's very easy to run out of hours. And what that means is that a pilot who's rostered for a flight the next day is now out of hours, so they're not legal to operate that flight. Okay. So then the airline will start contacting pilots through text messages or phone calls, and they will say, are you available? Can you possibly come in? Can you get us out of this hole? So I imagine the directive from the Aer Lingus Union is going to stop that. Okay. So that goodwill will, for whatever length of time the work to rule will continue. That's just one example of
So it means instead of... You see, I'll give you what one listener said this morning, that the pilots are members of a union called FORSA. I know we keep saying IALPA, but IALPA is a branch of FORSA. Let's be clear about this. Now, FORSA have managed to keep their name out of this a lot, but they are a branch of FORSA, and the FORSA leadership would have had to stamp this industrial action or else it could not go ahead. But this person who contacted us is one of the 85,000 other members of FORSA, and they made the point that there was a public sector agreement 3 months ago encouraged negotiated by, among others, Fáirse and ICTU, obviously through ICTU. There was a public sector agreement for me and my colleagues, who were not the highest paid by any stretch. My union agreed to 10.25% increase over the next 2.5 years, and they told us this represented the absolute maximum achievable through negotiations at this stage. Okay, now find myself as part of a union where less than 2% of the membership of the union, all of whom are on multiples of what I'm being paid, and I presume people understand the difference, but a lot of people in Fáirse are lifesavers as well in medical and health, etc., etc. They are on multiples of what I've been paid, and I see my union are endorsing what is effectively a work to rule. And what they're saying is the work to rule is designed to affect the maximum financial punishment on Aer Lingus, because they're not giving enough notice to allow Aer Lingus just give refunds. Aer Lingus are going to have to compensate. The maximum financial punishment on Aer Lingus and the maximum worry on passengers. Because if they had called a strike for a day or whatever, at least we would know what day the strike was on. But now, families will not know, from what I understand and from what you said, they will not know, even when they get to the airport, whether their flight is going to go or not. Is that not true, Simon, as far as you know, from what you've said?
As far as I know.
Well, and that's awful on people.
It is. And in fairness to the Aer Lingus pilots, like, I don't think any of them will want to inflict that pain willingly on their passengers.
These are all, like yourself, these are all intelligent people. There's nobody dragooning them into work to rule. They've decided to go on a work to rule. The work to rule means they won't suffer any financial penalty whatsoever. If they went on strike, they would. They don't suffer any financial penalty whatsoever. They work to rule. Aer Lingus, their employer, I don't know why they're so, anyway, their employer will suffer the maximum financial penalty because of the EU rules about notice. And then the passenger will be totally discommoded, because they will not know until they arrive in the airport with their three children and their buckets and spades, going on their once a year holiday, maybe once every 2 year holiday. Maybe they work in Fáirse, maybe they're a school caretaker represented by Fáirse, earning relatively low money, and they won't know until they get to the airport whether they're going on the holidays or not. That's unfair.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I'm not a member of the trade unions that you refer to.
But I
can't speak for them, and I can't speak for the overall position that was made, or the decision that was made to go down this avenue as opposed to calling outright strike action. The counter-argument, Joe, that I would say to you is that this has the least effect on disruption at this time of the year, that this is the minimal that the pilots could do to get their point across instead of calling a strike for whatever amount of days. And I would also just make what I would consider to be a bit of an obvious point as well, that the pilots have a grievance with their management. And in any disagreement, there would be two sides to that. So it should be also accepted that there should be a management response as well.
No, there is. What
I mean is in the sense of they should approach the pilot union, have a preliminary discussions and try and come up with a framework for talks to come up with it.
But in fairness, Simon, unless someone is telling barefaced lies here, haven't Aer Lingus said we've already had a mediation through the state mediation body, which, by the way, Fáirse is totally supportive of in other contexts. The state mediation body, the Labour Court and the WRC, have come up with an interim figure of 9.5%, not too far off what Fáirse accepted for the rest of the public sector, 10.25%. The state body, the pilots, after mediation, they said, no, we're not accepting that. Aer Lingus said, this is my understanding, and the WRC said, well, come back to the WRC, and the Fáirse won't go back.
Yeah, well, that I'm not aware of.
Well, that is the facts.
All right.
As weird.
I, like,
Like people, yeah, I hear people on. I heard the chairperson of the travel aid. You know, this strike is. But what was the line? Oh, this strike is going to end at some stage, which is nonsensical argument. The strike will only end when people agree to sit down, either through the state mediation body, which is highly regarded. In fairness, highly regarded.
Yeah, I know.
By Forza, like among others, and yet the pilots, this less than 2% of the membership of Forza, are saying no, we're not going back. So is the tail wagging the dog, pardon the pun here, in terms of...
Possibly, the only thing I would say, Joe, to this, is that obviously, and I'm just looking as an outsider, and I have a lot of very, very good friends who work in the company concerned.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And it's a great company. Yeah, and it's a good national company. Yeah. And, you know, they're very proud to fly the Shamrock all over the place.
But they're not owned by the state. They're a private company.
They are now.
They're no longer, whether they like it or not, and this will cement it. They're no longer the national airline. Sure, Ryanair could lay claim to that. You know what I mean?
There is the expression in the industry of a legacy carrier, and that's what Aer Lingus is. You know, like they are, you know,
people like them,
have an awful lot of goodwill towards them.
Most of the staff that people interact with, as you know, Simon, on Aer Lingus flights, Aer Lingus desks, are... It's thoroughly, thoroughly decent and caring, and they will go out of their way. Nobody ever doubts that. But by the way, Simon, in a cockpit of an Airbus at the minute, is it two or three pilots?
It's two on an Airbus. I think Aer Lingus have a rule that if you go over a certain number of hours, there will be a third pilot introduced.
Okay, so my point is, for the majority of the routes,
there will be two.
Okay, all it takes is if one of those pilots, for whatever reason, work to rule, or I'm not taking call, one of those pilots does not turn up, and sometimes it could be one of three, that plane does not fly.
Well, now the counter argument to that, Joe, is that the crew should have enough resources in the background that it, should that happen, and it does happen on a regular basis at any time of the year, that there should be plenty of crew in the background on standby who could be called. And again, you are sometimes reliant on the goodwill of the rest of your crew who can come in on days off and so on. But if an airline is properly crewed, that should not be an issue. So it's all an issue of resources. So if, you know, the airline, whatever airline it may be, if they're willing to pay the proper resources and have the necessary standby crew, that wouldn't be a factor.
Yeah, but we are where we are.
It
seems to be extraordinarily toxic, doesn't it, the relationship?
That's the point I was just about to make, Joe. Sorry, there are two sides to the story. And obviously, after the breakdown of the Workplace Commission discussions, the whole relationship between management and pilots does seem to be extremely toxic, and it is going to take a bit of intervention there to get them around the table and get them talking again. But as I like, just to come back to the original point, like the counter argument, and I'm saying this as an outsider, that the working, and I have full sympathy for people who are booked over the next few weeks, and I fully appreciate how important summer holidays are to people. But the counter argument is that the current arrangements at Aer Lingus are definitely less than the industry standard.
Well, I see. This is part of the toxicity or whatever of the argument. On the one hand, we have the union rep Mark Tighe of Forza. He's saying that the result of the ballot on, and I know they were deeply, deeply, deeply angered with the Aer, and we read that out on Friday with Aer Lingus saying, you want to check your electronic ballot or we will maybe go to the High Court. And they said, it's all above board, but we'll go anyway, but we won't forget what you've just said to us. And on Monday then, when he got the result, the first words were, this is a magnificent endorsement of the leadership of the union. So what's that got to do with it?
Yeah, I would share that opinion as well.
Okay, let me in fairness give you the other side, because as you know, Donald Moriarty has now become the voice of Aer Lingus, operations officer, that we should hear from the CEO. If it was Willie Walsh, he'd be on it. Maybe it was Willie Walsh, there wouldn't be a strike. If it was Willie Walsh, when Willie Walsh was there, he was on every single day and had five or six programmes. But anyway, Aer Lingus have asked us to read out the statement. The starting point of a scale for a co-pilot is 60,000. This is point one of a 26-point scale. IALPA appeared to indicate the starting salary for a fully qualified Aer Lingus pilot was 36,000. This is incorrect. That is what our trainees, our future pilots, are paid. A captain at the top of the scale currently earns a total package of around €287,000. IALPA is seeking a 24% increase in pilot pay, increasing the package of senior pilots by €50,000 to a total package of just under €350,000. The range in individual increases in pilot pay as a result of the 24% proposed by IALPA ranges from €50,000 at a senior level to €15,000 at a junior level. Now, I know the point that people will say other people are paid that or whatever in society, but the other people aren't going on strike. It's IALPA stroke Forza that are going on strike. And then to discover yesterday, I don't know who brought, I presume it was Aer Lingus who said, that Aer Lingus make a pension contribution of 21%, which anyone in the private, to their pension, 21%, anyone in the private sector would die for that, pardon the pun, die for that pension contribution. There's nothing like it. Plus, the retirement age is lower than most groups. Plus, the number of the perks. And I know that probably the last thing you want to do when your day off is fly to, well, maybe you do want to fly to Nice or Cannes or whatever. But and then and I know the whole thing, you know, it's life and death and they have our life in their hands, but so do other members of Forza. And they were happy with the 10% increase over 2.5 years. And the pilots, again, Joe, the pilots aren't.
I can't talk for other professions. Like, I'm talking as an outsider anyway, and I can't talk for other professions within Forza. But what I'll just say as a counter-argument, and I did hear the Aer Lingus rep, Mark Tighe, I think his name was.
No, he's the IALPA Forza rep,
He made the point yesterday, and I believe him to be true in this. He said that the starting salary is in the region of 47,000, and that all the figures that were quoted by management yesterday, I don't know who the individual was, but they included extra benefits such as sector pay, performance pay that Aer Lingus pilots are entitled to in the course of their duty.
That's fair enough,
so those, so they are in, the figures were somewhat inflated, and they're all dependent on doing maximum hours that all pilots are not guaranteed to do. Now, the other argument as well is that compared to other airlines, you could just come back to the top salaries that you mentioned. It's my understanding as an outsider that the guys on the top of salary, and they shouldn't be grudged for it because that's the deal that they're on, but those guys, they might be only on the very top of the scale for the last year or two of their careers.
Mm-hmm. Which means that's very welcome for their pensions, isn't it?
Yeah,
this is Mr. Moriarty, who, and we know what he's going to say. He said this on behalf of Aer Lingus. He said, the union says pilots have not had a pay increase since 2019. However, Aer Lingus reply, the pilots have received annual increments, which a lot of people don't get when you get to a certain point on the scale, which are a part of their pay, which has been worth 23% since 2019. They're now being offered a further, 9.5% through the Labour Corps, through a mediation process. So this is going to get worse, Simon, isn't it?
I think it will, but again, the 9% mentioned by suggested by the Workplace Commission, I think that might have just been like a pay restoration, because as I mentioned at the start, it's my understanding that pilots there are on a 10% pay cut for the past year. And there's a lot of pilots who have joined over the past, since COVID rather. Yeah, and likewise, a lot of the pilots who have joined are now on 10% less than their colleagues. And that creates a bad working environment.
Yeah, but Simon, I don't know, obviously, I do know it fair, but Kevin Callanan is the he's now General Secretary of ICTU, seconded. But Kevin Callanan is the General Secretary of Forza. He's one of the most experienced, sharpest trade union negotiators in the country. He's been at it for decades at this stage and highly regarded by everybody in that world on both sides of the table, so to speak. Now, I can bet you that when Forza went in there, IALPA as a branch of Forza, they would have gone in with Forza personnel as well, there was nothing that would have been left off the table. There's nothing that would have been left off the table. And the Labour Court would have been fully aware of every in and out and sideways and what the pilots did get, didn't get. Because Kevin Callanan would not have left that room without making sure that the Labour Court were aware of it. And then the Labour Court decided that they should be granted a 9.2% in a pay increase, Okay, and that they that they also left open the option to the pilots and to Aer Lingus to continue negotiations under the auspices of the WRC. How do we get people back to the table?
I don't know, like, and I think it should just be highlighted that that pay rise that was suggested was an interim measure.
Yeah.
It wasn't the overall package, and you could say that in favour of both parties. However, it is my belief from just talking to pilots within Aer Lingus that these pay negotiations have been going on for so long now that something just had to give. That the 9% was just totally insufficient, that as it is my understanding that any pay rises have to be backdated to the start of last year, even because these discussions have been going on for so long.
That's not without precedent. But is it like Aer Lingus are going to suffer badly out of this with this short notice, and then the way the work to rule is done? People will, if I arrive at the airport with my family next Tuesday, whether it's Wednesday, from next Wednesday onwards, and my flight is delayed or cancelled, I'm entitled to a lot of money back from Aer Lingus. If I'm at the other end of getting home and I arrive to Malaga Airport or Treviso or whatever, I arrive there for my Aer Lingus flight and it's not there because one of the two or one of the three pilots, there's a reason why he's not on the plane. He's not going to be penalised because he or she is not on the plane because it's not a strike action. It's a work to rule. So they won't lose a penny. But Aer Lingus will have to pay that family. They have to put them up in a hotel, will have to feed them, have to look after them, and somehow, because of the short notice, and it is work to rule, they will have to find an alternative way. It'll really damage Aer Lingus financially. Now, maybe they can take it. I don't know. Maybe they can.
Yeah, of course it would damage any company, and even reputation-wise, it would damage them in the short term. And it's like, I know in Aer Lingus, like, this is the last thing that they want to do, but they really feel that they've been forced into doing it. And it's not like they were without sympathy for their passengers. They know their passengers are their bread and butter, as they are in any airline. But like there are two sides to it, and I just come back to the point that I made as well, that if someone is unable to do their duty on a particular day, the counter argument to that is that there's insufficient resources in the airline and they've been overly dependent on that.
Yeah, but Simon, you can say that in any in this job here, when someone goes sick at short notice, you don't get a replacement. You just don't.
Yeah, but if people stand in for you,
that's by prearranged. Someone has to present the programme. But the producers, I would argue, and the researchers, if one of them goes sick, RTÉ don't have a room here with 25 people sitting, reading the.
But there's never white noise coming over the frequency. There's always plenty of resources in the background.
I tell you, and there never will be white noise because the people will go, especially the producers and researchers, go above and beyond to actually make sure people get the programme every day. And they don't get extra money for it. They do their absolute best. Everyone does to try and stay on the air. But I take a point of the force.
I hope the other point is that the Aer Lingus pilots, if there was an Aer Lingus pilot on with you, they would make the argument and say,
they're welcome to come on.
Yeah, but they would say that they have done this X amount of times to help the company out, and the company won't sit down with my union, you know. So
the company are saying we'll give you an Aer Lingus minibus. We'll all go into the LRC together. The company aren't refusing, and the WRC to get the company. That's maybe they're telling barefaced. The companies are saying publicly, we will go back to the table, to the negotiating table, and the understanding is that Forster are saying no, we won't.
Yeah, again, I can't speak for the trade union.
Okay,
But
I really appreciate you, Simon, putting another aspect of it. Thanks indeed.
Yeah, and I just hope that, I know the figures that when they're mentioned in the news, you know, anyone would be attracted by the figures, but I just ask people to keep in mind that those figures are for people at the very end of their career, those figures, and the vast majority of people within the company are actually on substantially less than that. And as I said, some of them have been on 10% less than what they should have been for the past while. And just to keep that in the back of their minds.
Okay, well, Aer Lingus, as I read out, I haven't got the energy to have the time, but I don't have the energy to just go back over the Aer Lingus points, but they dispute those figures. But anyway, thanks indeed, Simon. Go to Mina Mahoga, joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.